Oh, great. It feels good when you get it right.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing. So we were talking about fluoride this morning.
We're talking about fluoride and all things related to dental health.
Well, dental health is a big topic, and that there are a thousand things you can do to be healthy orally, and that one of them is not swallow fluoride. If I had some horrible substance, I'd probably say, you know, made people go blind, I'd probably call it bright eyes and tell them to splash their eyes. It's just, you know, fluoride is destructive of just about everything it touches. And they even use it, like in welding, it's the one that scavenges all the molecules so that you can get a good weld. You know, it's a very aggressive molecule.
Uh-huh.
That's the only remaining theory of how it might work to prevent tooth decay. It gets incorporated in the enamel, makes them more brittle and porous, so that doesn't help. It causes teeth to come in crooked, so that doesn't help, and it causes a delay in the eruption of teeth, so that doesn't help. And so systemically, there's no benefit that's ever been shown. And so they're saying, you know, when you brush on your teeth, you know, because it's a pesticide, it causes the bacteria to grow slower and,
wow,
and choke.
Uh-huh.
That's no different than the kid either. So,
uh-huh,
you know, it's a myth, and it's widely promoted by, you know, people that have the stuff to get rid of. And the thing that I think we really need to say is it is not fluoride. Or fluorine is the element itself. You'll never find fluorine by itself any more than a couple of nanoseconds because it immediately combines with whatever's nearby. So what they put in the water is a hazardous waste from the phosphate fertilizer companies. It's called hydrofluorosilicic acid, and it's a 23% hydrofluorosilicic acid, and, you know, anybody's really good at math say, well, you know, there must be 72% of something else in there, and, you know, the something else is, you know, wastewater from the pollution scrubbers, the arsenic, lead, cadmium, it's just a potpourri of bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So why on the green earth would anybody allow that to be added to their public water supply? Because, you know, it goes through your skin, it goes into the baby on the bottle, gets a dose that is known to cause all manner of diseases, including thyroid suppression and injury. So, you know, it's just a form of, you know, an insanity for people just to say, oh, well, it must be okay that it is. Well, you know, no dentist on this planet can treat your thyroid. That we can only destroy thyroids, you know, but once your thyroid's destroyed, then we need to send you out to a physician who can say, hey, your thyroid's destroyed. We need to treat that.
Uh-huh. What's the difference between sodium fluoride, calcium fluoride, and strontium fluoride?
Oh, lots. Sodium fluoride is a liquid. Calcium fluoride is a really beautiful rock. You can buy at a lapidary store. It's got various names, but there's, you know, calcium fluoride is a beautiful greenish rock that you can put on your mantle. I used to carry a block of calcium fluoride around with me and say, you know, this is calcium fluoride. And then not putting that in the water. Sodium fluoride it can be a white powder or it can be dissolved in water. It is a kind that is found in the phony prescriptions that have never been legitimately approved by the FDA. You can get tablets of sodium fluoride for your child if you'd like to, you know, lower their thyroid function, suppress your IQ. And strontium fluoride is basically fluoride will combine with every element in the periodic chart, including the inert gases. So you can get a molecule of fluoride hooked to virtually any other element. So we could go through all the periodic chart, and each one has a slightly different property. The product that's used in 91% of the water supplies in the United States to fluoridate them is hydrofluorosilicic acid, and that that's fluoride that's combined with both water and sand, and that it's got a patent on it in the U.S. Patent Office for extracting lead from brass. So if you had a cannon that was left over from the Civil War, the old brass cannon, you could soak that up in a nice big vat of hydrofluorosilicic acid, and you could get the copper and the lead out. So wouldn't that be nice? And you could go down to the recycler with copper and lead.
Uh-huh. But so sodium fluoride is not in the water supply.
Not generally. About 3% of the water supplies say they use sodium, but it's actually sodium silicate fluoride. It's still contaminated. It's not the only pure place you will find water additives that are free of contaminants would be bottled water companies will use the sodium fluoride to fluoridate their water. They have to, but they use basically contaminated water,
mm-hmm.
contaminated fluoride.
I called up our water supplier here to find out that we have fluoride added to our water, and we pay $18,000 per year to put it into the water.
That's a phony figure. Did they include any hazmat training? Did they include any of the waste cost? Did they include any of the other? That's the cost of the chemical.
Mm-hmm.
And so did they just use the same building they had? No, they can't have it in the same building because it's so corrosive,
mm-hmm.
that it eats the equipment in the building. So they have to build a little outbuilding. So then they have to include the cost of the outbuilding and so forth and so on. So they always like to kind of round down the cost of putting this junk in the water supply, and those are just the cost of doing business, blah blah blah. And it's not true. Is it? If they didn't have, they don't even want to talk about the damage. I was saying it eats lead from brass. That what happens to your faucet? Don't you have a brass faucet? Well, two things happen. One, it destroys the brass faucet. Two, and it sucks the lead into the children. So, and probably adults too, although there are no studies on adults that I'm aware of. That's not good. How about doesn't the city have some brass fittings, like your water meter and some other things? Yeah, eat those too. How about the pipes in the city? Because it eats everything, it doesn't stop eating just because it's eating, brass. It'll eat, stainless steel and concrete too. Can it eat those water pipes? Yes, it can eat those. So the cost of the infrastructure goes up too. So when they say it only costs $18,000, well, it only costs $18,000 to destroy the infrastructure of your community, and not just the pipes, but the intelligence of the children as well.
I watched the movie The Fluoride Deception. Are you familiar with that one?
Well, yes, I think it's an excellent movie, and I read the book.
Okay, so that one is describes how fluoride got to be accepted.
Well, it was a fake program from the beginning. That's what Christopher Bryson starts his book talking about the killing fog of Dora. In the 30s, Dora, Pennsylvania, people started, on Halloween evening, people started dropping like flies. And that the ambulances were running around, the fire department was running up with their oxygen trying to get these people, keep them alive, and many of them died. The public health service comes in and says, no, it was just thick air. And some of the more clever citizens said, I don't think that's right. I've seen thick air before, and it didn't make us fall over and choke. And so they called in an outside expert who came in and participated in some of the autopsies, and they found that the people had died of fluoride poisoning. And we just finished the Olympics recently, and so you hear about the whole terrible air in China. Well, there are cities in China where the air is so polluted with fluoride that the children get dental fluorosis. And Dora, Pennsylvania, was one of those communities in this country before the citizens demanded that we pass the EPA Act. You get a lot of static. Oh, the EPA is costing us this and costing us that. Well, it only costs you a little bit of this and a little bit of that if you don't have to buy another lung or something. The air used to be terrible in this country. And if you don't believe me, just stand by a 1955 Chevrolet sometime when it drives by and take a big whiff. You know, there used to be some real toxic stuff coming out of the back of the old cars. I like the letter from Ford Motor Company to Los Angeles City Council in 1952. Said there's nothing coming from the exhaust pipe of a modern Ford automobile in any way would harm a human being. They kind of left out carbon monoxide. I think people commit suicide sometimes for that. So anyway, they didn't fix the problem until we made them fix the problem. And that what Christopher Bryson is pointing out in his book is that the problem that we have in this country is due to industry. Industry and the government working together to deceive the public about how safe it is to have this kind of material in our water supply and fit to it, actually. We need to stand up and act responsibly and tell them that we don't think it's appropriate for them to be putting hazardous waste that's contaminated with arsenic and lead and cadmium and silica in our water supply.
So fluoride isn't safe topically or systemically?
I wouldn't have. You know, it destroys bone. So, you know, it causes inflammation. So you brush your teeth on a regular basis with a fluoride toothpaste, and then you're going to cause inflammation around the teeth. And that inflammation is the principal reason that bone is lost around teeth, and that the periodontal disease is the principal or the chief reason why people lose their teeth. And so we have them brushing with an agent that causes or accelerates that damage. Now, you know, that's, to me, sort of insane. You know, if you want to brush your teeth with something, tooth decay is an acid dissolving the tooth. So you say, oh, okay, acid. What neutralizes acid? Well, that would be base. And so what is base? Oh, that would be something like baking soda. So if you brushed your teeth with baking soda, you would be neutralizing acid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's probably a good idea. It certainly doesn't. I mean, you can put the baking soda in the cookies, and it doesn't kill the kids. If you put fluoride into cookies, you'd kill the kids.
Uh-huh.
So why not, in my opinion, we ought to just limit our oral hygiene products to products that are safe to eat.
Right.
And because most people don't realize it, but your mouth is the start of the digestive system. And so if I put chemicals in your mouth, they absorb into your bloodstream. If you spit them out, they absorb into your bloodstream. And that there are a number of studies on children in dental chairs where they would put, a topical treatment of fluoride on their teeth, and they would give them a little spit sucker, and they would pack their teeth up with the cotton rolls and all that to try to keep any of it from going down the throat. But still, if you had a tap on their arm, you can see their blood level of fluoride shoots right up the minute you start painting those teeth, because the mouth absorbs. And that's why it's insane to be putting chemicals in your mouth that are not safe to eat. So, you know, if you want to find something to brush your teeth with, go into your kitchen and find a little baking soda and salt and take a dab of peppermint oil, and then all of a sudden you think, oh, my, I've just invented a wonderful new toothpaste. Or you can go buy it in the health food store and call Ecodent. So, you know, that there are lots of ways to clean your teeth. If you have a problem with tooth decay, there's a study that I was pretty impressed with. It's a Lopin took a. She's a pediatrician, and she had very low income families, and they had lots of children with baby bottle tooth decay. And these kids were on the little sippy cups, or they were going to bed with the, you know, sugar in their bottle or whatever. And you know, she was having them do this and do that and do this and do that, and fluoride had absolutely no impact. So she decided to set up a little study. So she used three different levels of fluoride, distilled water as the control, and just for fun, she threw in iodine as one of them. Iodine reduced the baby bottle tooth decay expected experience by like 60%. None of the levels of fluoride had any measurable benefit. So, you know, wait a minute. Here's a product, iodine, which is essential for your thyroid. It's essential for health. It's an essential nutrient, and it had a powerful effect. So why aren't we telling them all to do that? Well, because there's no patent on iodine, and so we can't make huge amounts of dollars on that. So it, you know, although it's enormously beneficial, and it, again, iodine, you know, if you swallow it a little bit or absorb a little bit, it wouldn't hurt you. It's actually probably help you because you need it. But fluoride's just the opposite. Fluoride's what's called a xenobiotic. It poisons all manner of things.
What type of an iodine would you recommend if people wanted to use an iodine?
There's a real old form that you can get called Lugol's, which is 50% potassium iodide and iodine, and that people take someplace 3 to 5 drops of that a day to keep their thyroid working. So you could put 3 to 5 drops in on a toothbrush and scrub away with it without any problem at all. I'm sure. The one in the study I was mentioning was another form. It's called povidone, and then that is an activated form where one end of it looks like an ammonia group, like the end of an amino acid. Proteins are made up of a whole bunch of amino acids, and one end of the molecule of a protein has an ammonia group on it. Bacteria eat by identifying that ammonia group, saying, oh, good, food, and sucking it inside. So when you put that ammonia group on the end of anything, bacteria actively absorb that. And so povidone iodine is actively absorbed by bacteria, and that's the form that, and everybody's experienced that. If you go to the emergency room, say you fell off your bicycle and you got a big cut on your knee, and you go to the emergency room, and the nurse says, oh, my goodness, you've cut your knee. And next thing, she pulls out this Q-tip that's orange and starts painting your knee. Well, that's povidone iodine. It will disinfect your skin in a matter of a few minutes. That skin is really hard to disinfect because there's many layers of cells, but that povidone iodine, the bacteria actually suck it in, and they quit infecting your knee. That's a good thing, because then they sew it up, and they don't want to sew up bacteria inside the knee, so they disinfect it, which is a particularly good idea, I think.
Can you go to the pharmacist and ask them for the iodine crystals and mix up your own iodine?
Sure, I imagine. You can buy povidone on the off the shelf over by the Band-Aids. So I don't think that there's any restrictions on buying elements in this country, although I'm sure somebody would like to put a patent on it and say, no, you can't buy hair. Well, actually, you know, I guess I might be wrong on that, because if you go to the bottle of oxygen, then unless you say you're going to weld with it, then they won't sell it to you. So maybe there are restrictions on air and water.
I wanted to ask you now, if you've got a dentist who is, how do you break this news to your dentist that fluoride's bad for you?
You know, I think if you have to teach your dentist what they're morally obligated to know, that you're probably going to the wrong dentist.
I see.
I hate to be harsh about that, but, you know, this is not new information. I was writing my book on how to save your teeth back in the early 80s, and I sent the chapter off to friend of mine, he's passed away now, Roy Cupsonell, and I said, well, what do you think of this chapter, Roy? And Roy sent it back and marked it up and read pretty good, and basically he said, put a little sticky on it, he says, I think you need to re-examine your position on fluoride from a scientific point of view, and which really, really upset me, because I thought I was writing a scientific book, but what I found was I was merely parroting what I'd learned in dental school, which was totally false. And so anyway, with Roy's encouragement, I went and dug out a few more papers and so forth. And one of the things that came to my attention was the fact that the issue of fluoridation has been tried in 3 different courts in the United States in the 70s. And that in 3 different courts, they came to exactly the same conclusion, is that there was no evidence of benefit. There was evidence that it aggravates existing illnesses, and it causes an increase in cancer death rates. And so these findings remain intact to this day, that this is a substance that's not beneficial, and it aggravates existing illnesses like thyroid problems or, you know, joint pain, and increases cancer death rates. That's different than causes cancer. The study was done in such a manner so where they just determined that if you happen to, you know, be unfortunate enough to live in a community that added fluoride to the water supply, that the number of people that died of cancer in that community was greater. So you know that there's an increase in cancer death rates. It didn't identify fluoride as the cause of the cancer. That came later. So in 1989, that the NTP had completed the study that was ordered by Congress in 77. It only took them 12 years to get a two-year study done. And what they showed was that the number of rats with cancer was far greater if they had fluoride in the water supply than if they didn't, and it was linear. Is it if there's a little bit of fluoride, there's a little bit of cancer. If there was more fluoride, there's more cancer. If there's a lot of fluoride, there's a lot of cancer. The poor little rats that had the 79 parts per million. Now, have you understand that certain brands of toothpaste like Crest are 1,000 parts per million, and some of the others are 1,500. So 79 parts per million is not a huge amount of fluoride. But the rats had cancer of their lips where they touched the little spigot where they drank this water. So, you know, that's what we call a contact cancer. Mm-hmm. And that, if, you know, it's utterly insane. Every single cancer, the public health department, who the Congress did not trust to do the study, because, you remember, they were the ones that went to Dora, Pennsylvania, and said, no, just stick air. The same liars took these well-done study by Battelle, every single cancer, not just one level, but two, and all the tumors became benign, all the malignancies just, you know, some of them just went away, and they said, see, fluoride's not a carcinogen, and it came out as an equivocal carcinogen, and so that's the way that the public health department deals with, you know, pesky issues such as the cancer production from fluoride.
So are the dentists misled from dental school?
Absolutely. I mean, I was. I mean, I didn't go to dental school to become a mean, evil person poisoning children. That's what they do. But that wasn't my intention. Mm-hmm. Is it the reason is we have an absolutely horrible education system in this country. I was on the telephone yesterday, or 2 days ago, I guess, with a lady named Cynthia Trachtenberg of the University of Texas. And she was all upset because I have a criticism of the WebMD article about, I think it's Mercury, yeah. And and that apparently the students in her classes, when she says it's been proven safe and effective and it's approved by the American Dental Association, that they would Google her name, and what came up was not only her many proclamations of benefit, but also legitimate scientific criticisms that are, you know, of her statements. She made a bunch of, you know, just off-the-wall claims that are not anywhere near accurate. So I made my, I was asked by Charlie Brown of Consumers for Dental Choice to deal with that article. I went through and said, well, this article is full of misinformation. It's hard to know where to begin. But, you know, and so then I started off with the first false information and went right down through the article, not just hers, but everybody's. Mm-hmm. And she wanted me to take that off the Internet. And I said, well, Cynthia, I didn't put it on the Internet. Charlie Brown did. And she said, well, you know, it's interfering with my job. And I said, what's your job? And she said, well, I'm a teacher in a dental school. And I said, well, you know, Cynthia, you're putting out false information. And she said, I believe in the American Dental Association. I said, Cynthia, belief is something we say for religion. You know, you're supposed to believe in God or believe in Jesus. You know, when in a scientist, you're supposed to have numbers and experiments and you know, stuff that's published in the peer-reviewed scientific literature. She says, oh, I'm on the evidence-based council of the American Dental Association, and we've decided that all of the research that you cited is wrong. And I said, Cynthia, I cited medical research, and dentists do not get to decide medical research is wrong. None of the experiments that I cited can even be done by dentists. medical research. You have to be a physician or PhD in order to do medical research. Is dentists like to put themselves in a position where they can refute medical research, but essentially medical research is in peer review. You have to have a peer. That's what that peer part is. You don't just review it and say it's not valid. You have to be a scientist of equal or greater standing to do a peer review. And so having a bunch of dentists sit around and say, oh, well, you know, this mercury poisoning of the sheep, well, you know, sheep probably are more sensitive to mercury than children. And those monkeys, well, you know, hey, there's probably mercury in the bananas. You know, this is not peer review. This is bozo. So anyway, I explained that to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically kept coming back to belief. And I said, well, if you don't want to put it into religious terms, let me put it into military terms. I was in the Navy, and that I was a lieutenant, and if the captain told me that I needed to go out and stand on the grinder for, you know, 4 hours, I'd go out and stand on the grinder, because that's not a belief system, that's a command control system, and that's how the military operates, and that's how dental school operates, is that the American Dental Association says, teach the students this, 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 and this, and they approve curriculum for dental schools, and then all the bozo professors go out and they teach the students this, 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 and this, and that's so they can pass the test that the American Dental Association offers to pass a national board examination. Who writes the questions? So that would be the American Dental Association. So it's a totally controlled system of education. As a result, their graduates leave dental school thinking that mercury's locked into the filling, it's perfectly safe, fluoride's beneficial, and that they, and you know, it's perfectly safe, and blah blah blah. Well, you know, they don't get a balanced education; they get indoctrination. And much of the training in medical and dental schools is very similar to the techniques that are used in brainwashing. You know, that there's, you know, endless hours of work, and there's emotional stress and pressure that we're going to kick you out of school if you don't do this and do that. And so they try to put the person into a situation where they are compliant. You can think of Guantanamo, if you like. You know, that here's a stressful situation where if you do something the way that the authorities want you to, then you get rewarded. If you don't, then you get punished. And that's dental education. It's not, you know, I have another degree from the University of Kansas, and you know, biochemistry and physiology, and, you know, they offer the course, and if you signed up for the course, if you never went to class once, that nobody's going to call you. And, of course, you wouldn't get a very good grade, but, you know, if you show up and do the homework and you study and you do the research, one of the classes I had was scientific reading, and that has probably been the best class I've ever taken in my life. And that it was a young PhD professor, and that there were only 8 of us in the class, and it was a graduate level class, and that the idea was he would give us a topic and half a dozen articles or so to go read on it, and then we were supposed to come and discuss it. And he gave us the first, you know, half a dozen articles. We ran out, and as any good student would, we read those articles, and then we came back, and we started parroting back what the articles had said, and he started poking holes in us. Well, and so what we ended up learning was the fact that this was our job to go out and read the article and figure out why that article was not accurate, and or if it was accurate, and, you know, he might give us 6 articles, and 1 would be correct, and, you know, 5 would be, you know, full of beans. And so the idea was to figure out if we could support the theory that one of them was correct. So anyway, it was an excellent exercise, because what you found was there's a whole lot of garbage in the scientific literature that if you really understand the subject, that you can see the flaws in their methodology. And that's why I say it was one of the best courses I've ever taken, because you can read the brochures from the American Dental Association on the safety of amalgam, and they're just full of beans. I mean, you know, they make these grandiose claims, but, you know, they don't have any reference by it. You know, they say, oh, it's been proven safe and effective. Oh, yeah? Where? You know, what experiment was that? How did they do that? Oh, well, we've been doing it for 150 years. Well, in the last 150 years, we've had Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, and ALS, and autism jump up. Don't you think that might be related? No, 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 we're sure it's not. So it's a claims versus evidence, and that's the big divider. But anyway, she was not willing to be a bad soldier. She would, Cynthia Trachtenberg, the dental professor I started talking about, she said she was going, she insisted on teaching what the ADA told her was correct, because she was believed in the ADA. And I said, you know, you're a good soldier, you know, but you know, on the other hand, you have a sworn oath, that Hippocratic oath, the first and foremost, do no harm, and to please no man will I prescribe a deadly poison, to quote a little bit of the oath. So, you know, she said, well, I believe in the, you know, so, you know, and
went around and around.
I can't deal with belief. You know, you don't have any evidence to support your belief, and I believe. Anyway, we agreed to disagree.
I went to speak to my dentist about getting a filling, and he wanted to give me one of the silver fillings.
Thank you, yeah. It's not silver. It's actually a consumer fraud to call it silver.
It has mercury in it. It's mercury and silver, isn't it? Or
it's,
no?
It's 50 to 51% mercury. Okay. So if you went to buy a box of breakfast cereal and it was 51% oats, and that the label said it was wheat, that you could go to the Consumer Product Safety Division and say, you know, this product is misbranded. It's mislabeled. It's really oat cereal, not wheat cereal. And that every housewife knows that if you go to the label, that the first ingredient is labeled first, and then, you know, so if you read down the breakfast cereal and it says oat, wheat, sugar, then, you know, that's the order of concentration of those ingredients in that label. If it says sugar, oats and wheat, it really technically should be called sugar cereal rather than oat cereal. So
right, I had mentioned to him that I didn't want to get that filling because it had the mercury in it, and he said that the way that it's bonded to it, there's no way that it's going to come off. And I said, well, isn't it reactive to other kinds of substances? And, you know, wouldn't you be worried about the mercury leaching out? And he said, no, because of the way it's molecularly bonded to it, it'll never come out. That was the argument I was given.
And that's the lies that he was taught in dental school.
Mm-hmm.
The material itself is not bonded at all. It's actually called a mixture. If you put alcohol in water and stirred it together, you could get a pretty consistent mixture. But if you took that same glass of now alcohol and water and put it in the skillet and turned the heat up on the skillet to, you know, low simmer, in a matter of a few minutes, all the alcohol would come off, because they never really molecularly bonded. On the other hand, stainless steel is a molecularly bonded alloy between nickel and iron, and that makes stainless steel. And so if you put a fork in that skillet, you're still going to have a fork in the skillet, you know, 10 days, 10 years, 20 years from now. That fork is not going to unbond because you heated it up to a low temperature. That's what happens, and we have a video on the Internet, also on the IAOMT website, that's called Smoking Teeth. And Dr. Eichmann, Roger Eichmann, is a retired dentist from Washington, and he basically took a 25-year-old filling, a tooth, and he did a whole bunch of stuff to it, but one I remember really made the thing leak mercury was he dipped it in about 110-degree water. It was just tap water. He went to the bathroom a few minutes before and ran the hot water, and so it's, you know, it's whatever temperature comes out of your faucet, about 110 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And he dipped it in there and holds that in front of a screen so you can actually see the mercury, and it's coming off there like, you know, smoking a cigar or something. So, you know, your dentist is factually incorrect on what he's telling you, that the mercury is not locked into the fillings. In 1987, Murray Vimy and Fritz Lauscheider, medical researchers at the University of Calgary, took a sheep, just one, and they put a tracer amount of radioactive mercury and used the most common brand of filling available. I think it was Dispersal. It was not available, but the most popular brand used by dentists throughout the United States and Canada. And so they mixed up mercury with this filling and put the sheep under anesthesia and packed the mouth with protective gauze so that none of the particles could be swallowed. And they put in a dozen fillings in the sheep. And then they, you know, cleaned up any excess mercury. It was really easy because they had a Geiger counter. They could see if there's any stuff lying around. Mm-hmm. And so they took all the excess mercury out, cleaned the sheep up, sent them back to the to recover, and let it eat hay for the next 30 days. And then they laid the sheep on its side on a scanner like they do for cancer, and they scanned the sheep from stem to stern to see if the mercury had left the filling. And there was mercury in the sheep's hoof. It had spread from the tooth into the jawbone. The jawbone was just completely black, and that's with the minimum. They only used 10. The mercury is down to about 10%, I think, by the time the experiment had gone for 30 days. So this huge black reservoir of mercury in the jawbone indicates only a small fraction of the mercury that has spread to that jawbone. The principal concern was that the mercury in the kidneys you could very easily see the kidneys were totally outlined with mercury, and that there was mercury in the heart, liver. They repeated these experiments with pregnant sheep, and they were able to follow the mercury during pregnancy into the fetuses, and then transfer from the fetus again even after birth in the mother's milk. So your dentist is deceiving you. This is why this argument has gone on for so long, is that dentists don't feel it's their responsibility to make sure that their statements to the public are accurate. However, it is part of the law. If you go to your consumer protection laws in the state, that it says such things as false advertising. Is that if you make claims that are false to the public, then you are basically engaged in a deceptive business practice, and it's false advertising. And that in California, where I practice, it's even stronger. It says that the dentist has the obligation to make sure that what they say is true, and that they're guilty of a violation of the business and profession code, even if they don't know it's wrong. So, you know, the burden for your dentist is not you, and that's why I said is that if you have to go and try to re-educate your dentist, I think you probably need to, you know, get the phone book out and find another dentist, because they obviously haven't bothered to take this controversy beyond their, you know, their dental school training. You know, it's only controversial because the dentists have continued the deception. Everywhere where there is an open discussion of mercury, everybody agrees that it's not a safe substance. It's not, and you know, you were talking about fluoride a second ago. What happens with mercury fluoride? Well, that's a real toxic substance. Well, let's go take our toothbrush and scrub away at those fillings with them. What do you say? And you know, and one of the things that slows the amount of mercury coming off the filling is the corrosion. You know, like a nail will rust if it's out in the rain, so the surface of the filling can corrode. Well, you get your nice little toothbrush out there and scrub that corrosion off. They start leaking like the house on fire again. So, you know, I would say that if there was a profession that needs an overhaul, I would say it was the dental profession.
So if you have mercury fillings in your mouth now, what's the best thing to do about it?
Well, be sure and breathe out, because it comes off the mercury vapor, and so don't breathe out on anybody you like. But, you know, if you have somebody you don't like, just go and blow on them. you have to make fun of it because it's such a tough question. That what do you do about it? You know, maybe you're one of those 5 or 10% of the people on the planet that mercury doesn't bother at all. I met a guy like that in my practice. He was a weatherman in the Navy in World War II, and for 3.5 years, he stood the duty for 12 hours on, 12 hours off in a room that had open bowls of mercury, and there was so much mercury spilled on the floor, it would run over to one side of the ship when the ship leaned one way and run over the other way when it leaned the other. So he said mercury didn't bother him. And I said, well, that didn't really prove that mercury was bad in the room. He said, oh, yeah. Well, every sailor stood the duty. He said the longest they stood the duty opposite me was 90 days. He said some of them were sick in a matter of, hours. And he said, but, I stood the duty for, 3.5 years in World War II. And he said, then I became the weatherman over in the North Island Naval Air Station. And he said, I retired a few years ago. So he said mercury didn't bother him. And that, if you go into his genetic makeup, he's definitely not CPOX, and he's APOE22. And that means that his body has the ability to excrete mercury. Well, there's 3 different genotypes of APOE, and that the ones that are APOE44 are the ones that get Alzheimer's, like at 50, and that they're the ones that can't tolerate mercury. So there's a huge variation in the individual's ability to tolerate mercury, and that's what everybody's forgetting in the equation. Somebody will say, "Well, my grandmother had mercury fillings until she was 75. Whoop-de-doo. But, then she lost her mind and couldn't tell which way was up. So that, did mercury cause that? Very likely. Alzheimer's disease is one of the diseases that is absolutely linked to mercury. We can create all 7 of the hallmark diagnostic signs of Alzheimer's disease by having animals inhale mercury vapor. And that's why I said on your a woman in his practice who was a 50-year-old good-looking lady, and she was a triathlete. She believed that it was a good idea to be able to run, swim, and bicycle at high rates of speed, and heard that mercury fillings were not a particularly good idea, so she went to her local dentist, and like your dentist, he was uninformed, and said, have a seat, I need the money, and drilled her fillings out. And that she got a huge dose of mercury as a result of that. And she now is permanently disabled. So she went from the peak of fitness to a wheelchair.
Wow.
She's not expected to recover. She has been diagnosed with a severe case of Parkinson's. John Wilson, another physician friend of mine, one of his colleagues, went to the dentist and said, well, I think I'll have my fillings replaced. The dentist said, have a seat. Drilled him out, and he developed, within 2 weeks, a disease called idiopathic dilated cardiomyopathy. And this is where the heart just turns into pudding, and usually it's some tremendously fit athlete is dribbling the basketball down the court and falls over dead. Well, he sensed his heart was in trouble and got checked it out, and he had IDCM, and that as a result, he ended up with a heart transplant. IDCM, the studies on that show that there are 22,000 times more mercury in that heart than in a healthy heart. So, dentists are killing people. They'll, of course, say, he died of heart disease. Well, what if the filling that you were grinding out of his tooth caused that? Oh, well, you can't prove that. Well, you know what? With the improvements in medical research and CSI, then I think they're going to be able to prove that, because mercury has a very unique fingerprint, and that I think they're going to be able to show you exactly where the mercury came from and who did it to whom.
Now, if you have a mercury filling and it sticks around for 20 years or so, is there a chance that it's going to fall out of your mouth?
Well, it's kind of like the chance of the car falling out of the garage. Every dentist on the planet makes the hole inside your tooth bigger than the hole on the outside.
I see.
And so, any of you talk to a lot of people, has your filling ever fallen out? And everybody's had a filling fall out. But what happened first was it rotted around the edges. And so, if you had your termites working on your garage, the garage might fall down and then the car would fall out. But it's not a good thing to have your filling fall out. That means that there is a deterioration of you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's what allowed the filling to fall out.
I see. I was wondering how they kept them in there.
Yeah. Well, it's carpentry. Mm-hmm. It's that you make the hole on the inside bigger than the outside, and you stuff this thing in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if it falls out, something's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And probably not good for you.
Someone told me that cilantro is one of the only plants that's known of that can help to metabolize heavy metals out of the body.
I've heard that, too. I haven't seen any research on that.
Just curious if you knew more on that one.
No, I can't follow up on that one for you. I do know that greens are good for you. We're not supposed to be eating brown food all our lives.
Another thing I was reading was that black tea has naturally occurring fluoride in it.
And green tea has a lot of it, too. It actually has to do with the plant. The chamomile plant pulls up fluoride out of the soil. Fluoride is like the 13th most abundant mineral on the planet, so it's not like there's any shortage of it. And so the plant pulls that up, and it keeps it in a little packet inside the leaf. And so if you're a cow and you come along and eat a bunch of that tea plant, you get a stomachache. And so the next time the cow walks by the tea plant, he says, I don't like that plant. It gives me a stomachache. So it's a defense mechanism of the plant to poison some hay burner that comes up to eat it. The human beings have discovered that if you soak his leaf up in a little hot water, it makes a nice flavorful tea. Well, that's great, except for the fact that it also leaks fluoride into the tea, and which brings to mind an article that was in the medical journals recently of a lady in Independence, Missouri. She liked iced tea, Lipton's instant iced tea, as a matter of fact. And so she typically drink several glasses and large tumblers of iced tea a day because, you know, it can get kind of hot and nasty there in Independence. And she went to see her friendly physician with lower back pain. And that my wife and I were in China in 1999, invited to film a documentary on the crippling waters of China, and 450 photographs, and shot several hours of film, or actually video, of the people that are lives are just devastated by fluoride, not in tea, but from natural fluoride in well water. And that one of the first things they noticed is that, you know, they their elbow won't straighten out, or their back won't straighten up. You know, they have pain in the lower back. And that that's what this lady in Independence, Missouri experiences. She had pain in the lower back, and that she went to her doctor, and he gave her, you know, Celebrex or something and said, call me in 2 years. And so she did, and she came back, and he took an x-ray. And he noticed that in the 2 years, that the area of the lower lumbar spine, that's kind of where your hips and your joints all come together,
mm-hmm.
Had turned extremely white. And that's exactly what we saw on the fluoride poison people in China, is that that area ends up accumulating fluoride for reasons that are not entirely clear. And that accumulation is what actually locks up that lower lumbar spine and causes the pain and the deterioration of the spinal cord there. It actually ends up, in China, they end up paralyzed because of the deterioration. The fluoride actually makes the bone grow little spikes, or called exostoses, and they end up impinging on the spinal cord, so the person ends up paralyzed. It's a terrible disease. The lady in Missouri, of course, they caught it. Now she's only walking bent over, but I bet she doesn't drink any iced tea.
Well, is that similar to bone spurs?
Bone spur is exactly that. It's a bony exostosis. It's bone spur is abnormal bone. If you took your somebody and took all the meat off the bones, and you took the bone and you took your hand and ran it down the bone is slick.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Is that that bone is surrounded by muscles, and that when you move those muscles slide up and down the bone. There's a little perineum that goes over the surface of the bone, and everything is slick and smooth, and that way you can, you know, lift the boulders, and you can move the shovel and all that stuff, and the that's how the body is meant to work. Well, if you're exposed to excessive levels of fluoride, and you did that same experiment, took your hand and ran it down the bone, it feels like you're running down sand. Mm. You know, it's all gnarly and bumpy. And that's the abnormal bone on the outside of the cortical, normal cortical bone, because when the inside fills up, the body starts parking it on the outside. And a bony exostosis, or a spike, or a bone spur, is where this is actually piled up even higher. It can get really painful. Anybody that's ever had them can tell you about them. That, you know, and this is because, you know, your meat is sensitive, and so if you start, you know, trying to lift a bar and tote that bale and move your arms, that muscle ends up rubbing across that spike, and it hurts like crazy. That's not normal bone. That's abnormal bone. And fluoride is one of the few things that actually causes that to happen.
Hmm. You had mentioned eating egg yolks earlier. Did you mean a raw egg yolk or cooked? Or does it not?
The experiment I was referring to was done by Magnus Nylander, and it was done with cooked egg yolks. Oh. The reason that works is that when you chew on a Merkur filling, that you actually compress the filling slightly, unlike your dentist claims it's not an alloy, it's a mixture, and then compressing it causes mercury to come to the surface. This mercury then volatilizes in your breath, and that's where we started with our experiments back in 85. We're measuring mercury in people's breaths. It's mindlessly simple. It's easy to do. And it was first done in 1926 by a scientist named Alfred Stock. And so that mercury in people's breath is what you don't want to inhale. That's why I jokingly said breathe out all the time, because, you know, if you inhale that stuff, it's going to get your bloodstream circulating around and get in your brain, your kidneys. So, you know, not good. That what Magnus Nylander showed is that you can stimulate these fillings by, you know, chewing on a piece of gum, for example. Mm-hmm. But then if you pop in an egg yolk and chew that up, that the mercury emissions stop. And the reason for that is because of the well-known affinity of mercury for sulfur. The egg yolk is yellow because there is an element called sulfur. And sulfur is yellow. If you had a can of sulfur, anybody's ever used, sulfur can be used as a pesticide to keep, you know, I forget what we used it for one time. Rust or something on the leaf of the plant, and it sulfur kills that bug. Well, you open the lid up and look in there, flower of sulfur is yellow. And so the egg yolk is yellow because it's got sulfur in it. And that what happens is when you smear an egg yolk on top of these mercury fillings, that mercury loves sulfur. The Romans knew that 2,000 years ago, so much that they even named sulfur mercaptan, which means mercury capture. Sure. And that the smell of rotten eggs is the smell of mercaptan, but it's a sulfur compound. And basically, if mercury can combine with lots of different things, and so it basically will dump everything else if it has a chance to get a hold of sulfur. And so when that sulfur comes through there, that mercury, either the mercury vapor or mercury that's loosely combined with some other element, says, "Boy, look, I see my best friend sulfur over here," and it combines with the sulfur.
So does it pass through your body after that point?
The absorption rate of combined mercury-sulfur is fairly low, so most of it would pass through.
Mm-hmm.
But the other problem, that doesn't completely solve the problem of mercury fillings. I'll have people eating egg yolks here every day, but that doesn't solve the problem, because remember in the sheep experiment, the jawbone was black.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was mercury that never came out of the filling in the form of vapor. That's mercury that stayed in its native ionic form and migrated through the tooth into the jawbone. Once it's in the jawbone, of course, it doesn't stay there either. It will continue to circulate around your body until it finds sulfur. And that's why it's linked to all of these diseases. If you remember my short list of diseases, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, MS, and autism, those are neurological diseases. Something, and that the reason that only 10% of mercury ever gets into the human brain. If you're exposed to 100 molecules, only one of them is going to end up in the brain. But 95% of the symptoms of mercury poisoning are brain symptoms. And the reason is that the brain has lots of sulfur in it, and it's pretty important for us to have a brain that works. There's a study of dental personnel, and if they were CPOX positive, that 75% of them were neurologically impaired, and that 17% of them were what we would call severely impaired. So mercury gets into the brain. That's not a good thing.
Is there a vegetarian alternative for people who want to get sulfur in their mouth?
I don't think sulfur comes from an animal necessarily. Probably go get some garlic. I haven't seen any experiments with it, but garlic, anything it smells a lot. You know, the odor of garlic, there's like 150 different sulfur compounds with garlic.
Mm-hmm.
So garlic would be plan B. I think I would say beans, but beans are usually hot, and so you don't want to heat that filling up. Kind of counterproductive. So anyway, and you could probably get the eyedropper bottle of Kyolic garlic and put some on your finger and smear it around if you like that. So they're, but don't get the de-scented garlic, because de-scented is not going to help you.
Right.
The de-scented, they took all the, it's a form of insanity. They took all the active ingredients away.
Like decaf coffee.
Exactly. Yeah, well, the only thing I can say about that would be why.
Yeah.
So.
Now, how do the white fillings compare?
Well, they're good and they're bad. In my early years of the mercury free dentist, I had a lot of trouble with the composites. They weren't very good. Back in the 70s, some of the materials we had just wouldn't hold up. Not only that, it was kind of gooey and runny, and it was hard to get it to, fit in there right. And, look like, you can get it to look like a tooth, but you couldn't get it so you didn't pack, half a pound of lettuce between your teeth and that sort of stuff. So after struggling with that for a few years, I ended up using was a process called indirect composite inlays, and I made them in the office, or my dental assistant or my lab tech did, and we could fix a whole mouth in just a matter of a day or two with some wonderful, strong, durable fillings. I've seen some of these things that are now 20 years old, and that they're actually slightly taller than the tooth because they're wearing less than the tooth. But I take my little polish wheel, and now they're smooth again, so they're happy little clamps. But that was a fairly steep learning curve. I decided I didn't want to use mercury in my office, and that at the time, a lot of the technologies that we have today just didn't exist. And so I still recommend indirect composite inlays anytime you have a big hole in a tooth. I'd much prefer that over a crown. A lot of dentists think the solution to a mercury filling is a crown. No, it's not, because, just grinding a tooth down to the nubbin is not the way to fix it. You figure out what's not part of the tooth, take it out, make an impression, make a good, hard, durable replacement, and glue it in the hole. That's an excellent way to fix a tooth. Another way to fix a tooth, if there's it's like a lake. If there are rocks all the way around the lake, the lake is not going to, blow out a dam or something like that. And that's if there's just a hole in the center of the tooth, especially if it's on the side of the tooth or someplace where it doesn't hit real hard. Those are real easy to fix just by cleaning the mercury out and then flowing the thing in. And since we were talking about fluoride, one of the insanities of the dental profession, and I believe it's actually unlawful, we're in the process of trying to find an attorney that wants to deal with it, they love fluoride so much that they have added fluoride to a number of products. So here's a number of fillings that have fluoride leaking out into the adjacent tooth, into the nerve, into the jawbone, into the cheek. And that, remember the poor little rats that had the 79 parts per million fluoride in their water had cancer of their lip.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what evidence does the dentist have that they're not going to be causing cancer of the lip with their, you know, fluoride leaking fillings?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't have any, but we know it's good because we have a tremendous belief. I'm sorry. I believe it's bad for rats. Anyway, so it's kind of like, you know, when you're dealing with a rogue profession that doesn't pay any attention at all to the scientific evidence, that the public is very much at risk, and that that's one of the reasons I wrote my book on how to save your teeth. We talked about how to kill off the germs that are causing oral infections. I'll get to that in a second. But back to the fillings. That when you decide to replace a filling or it becomes necessary to replace a filling, I recommend that you go to the IMT website and you look up the patient protection protocol. You can also look up and see if there's anybody that's bothered to take the courses that on how to do this well and become accredited in your area, and that a good many dentists have already done that. So, you know, I would say that you're probably better off to go to somebody that's already bothered to take the course than somebody hasn't. It's kind of like if you're going to go flying, it's nice to have your pilot have a license. And rather than saying, oh, I just found this airplane out on the yard the other day, I think we'll go for a flight. And so anyway, that's the protocol. And then say composites with no bis-GMA and composites that have no fluoride leaking. Bis-GMA is the it's not BPA. If you've been watching the papers lately, there's a bunch of brouhaha about bisphenol A, which is leaking out of your plastic water bottle along with phthalates at a great rate. Many of us have been complaining about that for some time, but now Canada has banned water bottles with the phthalates and the bis-GMA leaking out of them. So that's a good thing. The trouble is that they say, well, you should just drink tap water. Well, no. That's not the solution. The problem with tap water is it's got hydrofluorosilicic acid, arsenic, lead, and fluoride in it. So, you know, their solution is part of the problem, I think. But anyway, that the fillings materials can contain this an element that's called bis-GMA that breaks down to bisphenol A. How much, we don't know. The Academy is in the process of setting up studies to actually investigate this. Very concerned about this. So anyway, there are products that contain that. Just say I want one of those that doesn't leak mercury, leak fluoride, and doesn't contain bisphenol A. And if they don't know the answer to that question, they can find it out. They can, you know, the Clifford reactivity testing in Colorado Springs. Jess Clifford would be glad to tell you which ones have this and that. And the other thing is the telephone still works. You can pick up the phone and call them. What I think is an absolute wrongdoing, if you would, is that the manufacturers of dental filling material are not required to divulge their ingredients. Well, what if you don't want any fluoride?
Uh-huh.
Well, they're not required to tell you. And so it's not on the label. And so, you know, it'd be like if I, and same thing's true of your iced tea. You get your iced tea, it doesn't tell you it's got fluoride in it. You go buy a bottle of wine, it doesn't tell you it's got fluoride in it. You know, that we, as consumers, are being deceived and about how good the stuff is, and so we haven't learned to demand our rights. They don't have a right to put stuff in your fillings and not tell you. They don't have a right to, you know, have arsenic, lead, and cadmium in your food, your water, and everything, and not tell you. But they are. They're deceiving you. So anyway. Did I get to the answer on that question?
You did. What's the website that you mentioned again?
IAOMT. I as in enter, A as in academy, O as in oral, and M as in medicine, and T as in toxicology, IAOMT.org.
All right, great. So that's a good resource for our listeners.
It is a good resource, and from... the smoking teeth video is on the homepage of the IMT, but if you Google smoking teeth, you'll go to a whole series of little video clips. None of them are more, you know, 6-8 minutes, 9 minutes long on YouTube that I've put together to try to inform the public about this information. A video is so much easier than share large global ideas in a very short amount of time.
When you mention the arsenic and lead, does that also come in with the fluoride that they're adding?
That is from the fluoride they're adding. The products that they're used in 91% of the fluoridation schemes are highly contaminated. The lead is not so high, but the molecule, hydrofluorosilicic acid, for some strange reason, attracts lead. You know, I talked earlier about how the mercury loves sulfur. Well, hydrofluorosilicic acid loves lead. The problem is that just putting it in water is, you know, kind of like putting a fork in the frying pan. It doesn't quit being a fork. And so putting hydrofluorosilicic acid in the water, some of it dissociates or breaks up into the elements, and you have activated sand, which is not that good for you either. It causes accelerated aging of your cells. But the hydrofluorosilicic acid itself, for some reason, seems to be able to suck fluoride into the bodies of children. The Roger Masters has done two huge studies of this in the areas that local fluorides to the water supply compared to areas that do not, and that he showed that the children that are drinking silico fluoride treated water, hydrofluorosilicic acid treated water, had double the amount of lead in their bloodstream as the children that did not. Then he went on further and looked and saw that there was a racial difference, is that if the children happened to be Hispanic, that they had a fourfold increase in the number of children with high blood levels of lead, and if they were African-American and there was any other source of lead exposure, like, for instance, they might live in low-income housing that was old, mm-hmm. that they had a six-fold increase. And so that it's basically the old axiom of toxicology that, you know, that there's exposure and there's an agent that, because the old houses had, you know, copper pipes that were soldered with lead before, 77, they made them quit using lead solder in the pipes. And then, or about the same time, they made them take the lead out of the paint. It was a little earlier, I think, the lead out of the paint. And so this house may have old lead paint. It may have old lead solder in the water lines. And a lot of cities, municipalities, still have, Chicago still got lead pipes. So, you know, there's lots of lead around there. And then add to that a very corrosive chemical called hydrofluorosilicic acid, and it starts sucking lead into the bodies of these children. But it doesn't do it equally; it does it disproportionately. That's what has made Dan Stockin of the Lilly Center and a number of other people say that this is a very abusive policy that adding fluoride to the water supply, because it causes disproportionate harm. It harms the poor people. It harms the people that live in older houses. It harms the people that happen to have a genetic makeup that makes them lactose intolerant, such as many Native Americans, African Americans, Asians, and Hispanics. So, or maybe they just can't afford milk. I don't know. I was talking about how mercury loves lead. Mm-hmm. Mercury loves sulfur, and hydrofluorosilicic acid loves lead. That fluoride loves calcium, and that, you know, if you have that's why it's stuck in your bones, because that's where you can find a lot of calcium, and so the fluoride accumulates in the bones, stuck to calcium, and that's but when you have the hydrofluorosilicic acid in the water, it loves lead, so it has the ability to pick that lead up out of food or air or water, wherever it is, and carry it into the bodies of children. Why is that important? Is that research has shown conclusively for now almost 30 years that lead lowers the IQ of children, causes violent behavior, and is a link to a whole host of ills in our society, including the drug addiction problem. Is it poisoning children with lead is not only unconscionable, it destroys a nation. And that if I'm old enough to remember that when you didn't have to lock your door. So, you know, if you look at what's happened to our nation in the last 60 years since they began adding fluoride, is that we've created a nation full of violent criminals that come up and attack us, and you know, to have a whole different agenda they can't get through school. They can't read and write. They have learning disorders. They have brain damage. And that, you know, so when the dentists say, "Oh, we've been doing this for 60 years, haven't noticed any problem," they say, "Are you living in a cocoon? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you live on a desert island someplace. Everybody else has noticed a whole host of problems."
To get back to the fillings, I just wanted to mention, I heard white fillings have cobalt in them, some of them.
Not to my knowledge. The white fillings, one or two brands had some beryllium in them. I don't believe cobalt did. You know, that there is a...
I could be remembering it correctly. Could have been.
Well, you know, the other, they do use cobalt in some of the castings for partial dentures. Chrome cobalt is one that I recall that had some cobalt in it. You know, it's kind of like you need chrome. And there was actually a study done that showed that if you had a chrome cobalt partial, that you had a higher level of chromium in your system. Chromium is one of the things that helps prevent diabetes, mm-hmm. and arsenic is one of the things that helps promote diabetes. So, you know, the chrome cobalt partials delivered a little chromium. The study did not look to see if it also delivered cobalt. So, but I presume if the chromium's coming out, that the cobalt's coming out too. So.
Mm-hmm. And what about gold fillings?
Gold is never pure. Actually, the pure gold is 24 karat. And that the trouble with gold is that it will suck the mercury out of amalgam filling. And so putting the first steamship that used a brass propeller had an iron hull. And that, you know, it got across the Atlantic, but its propeller fell apart. And the reason is that the iron ate the brass. And that and so if you look at a ship today, they have these big blocks of zinc glued to the hull or riveted to the hull of the ship, and they have brass propellers still. So what's going on there? Well, the iron eats the zinc. And so they just gave the iron something else to electrolytically dissolve rather than the brass, so it would prefer to dissolve zinc before it dissolves brass. So the trouble when you go to the mouth is that you've got the gold next to a mercury silver filling, or silver mercury filling, that order, and that the mercury gets dissolved out of that filling, and the filling corrodes rapidly, like the propeller falling off the ship. So if you do use gold, use it as the only material in the mouth, and don't use it with other metals, and that don't let the mercury be in there, don't let the chrome cobalt be in there, don't let the stainless steel be in there, just use one metal all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are some companies that make some very pure precious metal gold, and that the gold that I like is the gold that has 90% gold and maybe 10% platinum.
Mm-hmm.
These are really noble metals, and they don't break apart. You know, you can take gold and whack it with a hammer and keep whacking it until you can actually read a newspaper through it. The molecules are glued together so good, you can get it out to the point where it's just a thin film, and you can actually see through it. So that's a good material. It's called malleable, you're able to cast that and make it fit teeth accurately and seal them up. The best thing for a tooth is, you know, what God put in there is called enamel, and unfortunately we don't have any enamel, so we don't know how to make it. So we have to find some way to fix it. What they try to do with the gold is they cover it with porcelain, and that's probably a good thing to do, as long as you don't have to drill a lot of tooth away to do that. Is that I would rather have a gold tooth than one that's cut down to a nubbin. So if the tooth is already pretty wiped out, then you can put porcelain over gold, and that makes a good restoration in the front part of the mouth. They've been able to make solid porcelain teeth for more than 100 years. So I remember when I was first in practice, I had a guy who's about 90 years old, and he had a porcelain crown on his lower front tooth. And I looked at that, and it was in good shape, and cleaned his teeth, and I complimented him on, the health of his teeth at the ripe old age, and that the only restoration he had was that porcelain tooth. And I mentioned that, and he said, you know, I broke that tooth when I was 10 years old, and my mother had to save the egg money for a whole year before she could afford to have the dentist make that tooth. And so this was about 1905 or 1910, and he said, so she got me that tooth, and it looked good again, and he said, but then it fell off, and I swallowed it. And he had kind of a sneer on his face, and he said, and my mother got it back. And he said, it's been on ever since. So that's a pretty good success record. And that was a solid porcelain crown. So there are ways to fix teeth where you don't have to use metals. If I were the first dentist in there, you'd never have any need for metal at all. It's just not necessary.
Now, when I went to speak with my dentist, I had one cavity that's way in the back, and I asked him if we could use the composite for it, and he said because it's so far back, it's very difficult to keep it dry, and if it's not perfectly dry, the composite won't seal properly, and there'll be a little gap, and there'll be seepage, and it'll continue to decay around where the composite is, so he recommended that he put a mercury